Today is Pentagon Solutions in the 3 o'clock hour, and every Wednesday at 3, we take a deep dive look at issues that the Pentagon is facing, and we talk to experts on defense issues, both inside and outside DOD, sharing ideas that leaders inside the Pentagon and in the contracting community can use to solve the big challenges that the defense community faces. We're trying to deliver information that will show you the path to those Pentagon solutions, and today, one of the challenges that we're looking at is cybersecurity. The Office of the Secretary of Defense Networking and Integration at DOD's Terry Takei's office has honored the National Defense University iCollege cyber professors, Professor Gil Duval, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley, for exceptional achievements in conducting the 11th U.S. DOD International Cyber Workshop. And I'm pleased to have all three gentlemen in the studio with me today. I appreciate your time to come in and talk about the cyber challenges that the defense community is dealing with. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Duval, I'll start with you. Give me an overview of this service that you provided for the Pentagon for which you've been recognized.
Certainly. At the National Defense University, we do a series of courses that deal with the cyber arena, cyberspace arena. And what we tried to do in this exercise was provide a snapshot of these courses, both from a academic perspective and a hands-on perspective to a worldwide community, so a global community. Mm-hmm. So we took advantage of some of the research we've been doing in protecting critical infrastructures. And my colleague, Dr. Saunders, has been doing this for about 8 years of research. And we condensed this down into a series of demonstrations that allowed us to convey the concepts both for the attack profiles and also the defensive and risk mitigation aspects. So that's what we were able to present in this arena.
Who is your audience at this?
The audience was, again, an international audience. Again, it's the workshop is entitled the International Cyber Defense Workshop. So this involved approximately 21 different countries around the world, Europe and Asia, South America, and had over 240 participants at various times during the week. There's a week of seminars and workshops and lectures.
Dr. Saunders, I want to ask you about the presentation that you made, because I see that you hit on two issues that have gotten a lot of play both on Federal News Radio and other media outlets. Stuxnet is one,
yes.
And that's become kind of a buzzword for what's going on in national defense type cybersecurity. And also industrial infrastructure. We covered fairly extensively the episode that we thought, at least at first, was a cyber hacking episode against a water treatment or a water plant in the Midwest, and turned out not to be, but focused everybody's attention on that. Talk about the kind of the state of the art in those two areas right now, please.
Well, I think the issue is understanding what's going on in this area a little better.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to be very technical in nature, so we have a lot of complex equipment and relationships, and our purpose really at NDU is to help people understand, especially in our military and our government leaders, what the threats and vulnerabilities are in this area. So my job is to take some very technical concepts and realities and try to enable people to understand them better. To do that, as Gil briefly mentioned, what we did was to film. We have a pretty extensive and complex laboratory at NDU where we put mock systems together. They're actually real, what are called programmable logic controllers that control water and electrical and transportation systems. But we hook those up to mock electrical grids and bridges and pipelines and these kinds of things. And so what we did is when people come to the university, we can demonstrate it straightforward. They can see it in person. But so what we did in this particular case was film the attacks on these pieces of critical infrastructure by utilizing things such as the particular components in Stuxnet, which again are very complicated, but we have to attempt to simplify those so that our students, our audience, understands better what can happen in these kinds of environments. And then also, of course, look at the potential repercussions in this area. At the same time, you know, if you're trying to understand how to do defense, you have to understand offense pretty well. So we put the offensive side together so that we could then say, okay, given this particular kind of attack, such as a USB insertion attack, which has been pretty well publicized, what can we do to prevent that kind of thing? And particularly in the case of Stuxnet, you know, there have literally been hundreds of similar kinds of incidents that have happened over the years. It just happens that Stuxnet was raised to the surface because of the target here being Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is we demonstrate specific kinds of attacks and then, again, talk about how to prevent these kinds of things. And there are lots of ways to prevent these things from happening.
I want to get into some of those throughout the course of the hour. You mentioned the USB attack, and you're alluding, I imagine, to Buckshot Yankee, and as it was referred to at DOD. And I've been fascinated for a long time with the idea of the personal level of cybersecurity, how you prevent that one person from making that one mistake, or if that's even a reasonable goal. And maybe we can talk about that later on in the hour. Dr. Hurley, talk about your role in this, and as Dr. Saunders mentioned, just the whole concept of cybersecurity being this perceived to be, at least, this very large, complex thing, and sometimes it being just a case of the one person doing the wrong thing.
Well, thank you. Well, I got the chance to get involved due to the efforts of Gil Duvall. And what we were looking at doing is that, particularly from the National Defense University for the I College, our emphasis, is, of course, is on defense.
Mm-hmm.
How do we protect the information, which is the biggest asset that we're looking at within the federal government? So what we decided to do was that we knew, as we started to look at a number of different things that take place around the world, that it was important for us to get a sense of how we can better protect, particularly those in the military and those who are the executives within the government, who are our main constituents.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got an opportunity to look at particularly this workshop, because it was really kind of primarily designed for military practitioners. And it gave us a chance to kind of look at some very unique things, because one of the things that we believe that's very important at the NDOI College is how do we do to make sure that we best prepare our students for real-world and hands-on activities.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a chance to kind of look at how do we merge really the value of the actual theoretical concept with respect to hands-on, real-world types of issues that we see on a daily basis.
You said something there that I want to follow up on when we come back from the break. You talked about protecting the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that mindset is a little different maybe than what we were thinking about and talking about regarding cybersecurity, say, 3 to 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
And I want to get your thoughts about that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are from the National Defense University iCollege today, Dr. John Hurley, Dr. John Saunders, and Professor Gil Duvall. We'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
High for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High, the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Frank Shalufo, Associate Vice President and Director, Homeland Security Policy Institute at the George Washington University, commented during the panel discussion entitled Cyber Power, Which Nations Will Emerge as the Cyber Powers of the 21st Century? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
There's a big difference between cyber terrorism and terrorist use of cyberspace, which is primarily intended to enhance and facilitate their tradecraft, whether it's for communications purposes, whether it's to fundraise, whether it's to do targeting analysis.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Booz Allen Hamilton believes that cybersecurity is no longer just about protecting assets, but about enabling organizations to take full advantage of the vast opportunities that the ecosystem of cyberspace now offers for business, government, and virtually every aspect of our society. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Stroke. It's the fourth leading cause of death and the number one cause of disability in the United States. Just as a blocked coronary artery can lead to a heart attack, a blocked carotid artery can cause a stroke. Clearing those blockages can be done two ways. Surgery, known as endarterectomy, and stenting. The CREST trial compared the two.
Based on the CREST trial, for patients who are older, and the majority of vascular patients are older, carotid endarterectomy is superior to stentings.
Mayo Clinic Dr. Albert Hakem says people over 80 who have stents placed to open blockages in their carotid arteries have a higher risk of stroke after treatment than those who have the open operation. But if you're younger, both procedures are equally safe and beneficial. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Congress got stingy on federal construction spending for 2012. We'll find out what that might mean for your agency's plans. Plus, the 2012 Defense Authorization Bill contains lots of hidden provisions. They affect both the government and its contractors. We'll find out where the landmines are. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions today focusing on cybersecurity in the national defense environment. And my guests are from the National Defense University's iCollege, Professor Gil Duval, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley, all award winners. Terry Takei's office at DOD recently giving them an award for exceptional achievements in conducting the 11th U.S. DOD International Cyber Workshop. Dr. Hurley, before the break, we talked a little bit about the concept of protecting the information. And off the air, I told you the story that about 3 years or so, I guess, it's been now. I talked to Jerry Davis, who's now the Chief Information Security Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and he was the first person that I ever heard talk about the concept of securing the data rather than securing the network. Mm-hmm. Before that time, I had heard people talk about securing the network from a hardware perspective. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure people don't get onto my servers and so forth. And I don't know if Jerry invented that idea or if he was just the first person I heard it from. But you used that phrase, protecting the information, before we took our last break. Talk about that concept, what's driven that shift in your view, and whether you are confident that folks now are on board with that worldview, mm-hmm. or if there are still some, I'd call them stragglers, who are coming along behind and still kind of stuck on the idea of keeping particular pieces of equipment safe.
From a historical perspective, applications are typically kind of put into two categories. We typically have what we call compute-intensive applications and we call data-intensive applications. Typically, as you look at the advancements that we see from the software side, hardware side, and networking, you kind of see a natural evolution that's kind of moved us more in terms of looking at a focus of the systems. Remember, traditionally, from a historical perspective, the emphasis was primarily on the system side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it became more important as we started to look at businesses, particularly other different organizations, the information and the data became really the biggest asset.
Mm-hmm.
So the assets with respect to the organizations, with respect to the government, with respect to citizens, is really the information. And so there is tended to be much more of a focus now on looking at how do you protect the information. The systems, of course, we assume to be typically tools. that are utilized to either exchange and transfer information. But the biggest asset is really the information.
Mm-hmm. Professor Duvall, I figured it would take about 5 seconds for Buckshot Yankee to come up, and that's indeed what happened in my conversation with Dr. Saunders a couple of minutes ago. Something else we touched on during the break off the air was the idea of putting in place procedures and policies for people to follow. Is it reasonable for people to expect that those procedures and policies are going to be followed, or should a more defensive posture be pursued, not just the DOD, but across government, when you have networks as large as federal agencies where people might be plugging in things that they shouldn't be plugging in?
Well, as you probably realize, as you increase the size, you increase the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And as you begin to share information in a more complex environment, you need to have more controls in terms of who can access what. Policies and procedures are certainly something that we need to follow. And we get a little bit of help from technologies that kind of enforce those policies. Again, so if you don't have your pass card or your common access card, you can't log in to get to certain equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to strive for in government is, I guess, the enforcement of those procedures, and don't rely on technology to catch everything, but use technology as an enabler to allow us to enforce those policies.
Is the technology available readily to agencies to allow them to do that, are we still in a place where that technology is not easy to get a hold of and deploy?
The technology is readily available. The challenge becomes there's so many different versions of the technology. There's, product A, product B, product C.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start putting all those products together, you run into interoperability issues. So interoperability becomes the key challenge for use in our government systems. So as it becomes more complex, more people on the network, everyone using a different product, how do we get these to be interoperative?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens sometimes, in order to get the information across different boundaries, in some ways we weaken the compliance issues. So again, to get two pieces of the technology to work, we set the permissions at the lowest level, which allows someone either accidentally or maliciously to get around the controls that we've set up.
Dr. Saunders, I'm hearing vendors who have had on the show that sell cloud solutions going, but the cloud can solve that. The cloud can solve that. Is that fair to just jump right to that conclusion? It sounds, from what Professor Duvall is talking about, like there's a potential solution there, but I don't think it's probably as simple as that, is it?
Our emphasis a lot in our program has been on finding the best solutions, finding the best practices, and delivering those. Is it always cloud? Well, honestly, I think we've had, quote, cloud for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Originally back in the idea of time sharing. And where has it gotten us? You know, we are where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a particularly big believer in cloud. There's been quite a discussion recently about that, obviously, as you know. And
mm-hmm.
I think that people like Terry Takei and other people have sort of, let's hold off on that for a while. Let's think about this a little more carefully. Our data that we're trying to protect is a little bit more serious than your home data. I think it's going to take a while before we sort that out.
Mm-hmm.
My own personal area of expertise and focus has been in the SCADA, the supervisory control and data acquisition systems that control our grid and our water systems and our transportation systems. And that's the focus, was the focus of the talk that we delivered for the workshop. And it's a whole different ballgame here where anybody thinking about doing this in the cloud, I'd have to call them a fool, virtually. this is a very important. It's the results of attacking something like this are kinetic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about information protection. We're mm-hmm. talking about protecting pumps and motors and these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And, So putting something like that in the cloud is just a non-starter as far as I'm concerned.
What are some of the misconceptions that people brought to your, that they didn't think obviously were misconceptions, that they brought to your presentation? There's always an opportunity, I imagine, for people afterwards to come up and say, this is what I got out of what you had to say. What did people bring to you after you spoke?
I think it was eye-opening. It usually is for a lot of people. The state of the art in this arena is very different than the state of the art in a typical IT kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
So opening people's eyes to how these systems work and what are the potential vulnerabilities, how are those different? I think that the people in these arenas are working very hard to seal the gaps, but you have to look at the time frame for computing. We're talking about anywhere from 18 months to 3 months refresh rate. In this arena, in the SCADA control systems arena, we're talking about decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite as easy then, and it's very expensive to do refreshes and patching and updating, and those kinds of things are a completely different ballgame here. So I think it's eye-opening for people, and that's typically the kinds of questions and issues that they raise. Yeah.
If I can elaborate on John's research effort, one of the things that comes out in this is that you can show, we have a pipeline demonstration that represents an oil pipeline. You can show how a system can appear to be operating normally,
mm-hmm.
and in the background, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Either, and it's, you know, if it continues to operate in the altered fashion, you could have, as John mentioned, physical destruction of the infrastructure. And I think that's one thing that people, they trust the instrumentation, but then you see how you can fool the instrumentation to show you one thing, but what's actually happening is something altogether different.
Yeah, what's the issue with that? That's fascinating to me, the idea that what's before someone's eyes can be absolutely 100% inaccurate. I guess it's easy to say, well, we can just fix it, but obviously we can't just fix it. It's not quite that simple. Dr. Hurley, you're nodding your head in agreement with what I'm saying. What is the key to at least be able to begin understanding mm-hmm. the potential there for disastrous situations when that's not what you work with every day?
Well, it's actually interesting because you asked really the right question a little earlier. One of the biggest misnomers and one of the biggest challenges that we have is that people tend to confuse on a fairly regular basis the difference between a technology and a system.
Mm-hmm.
Systems, for the most part, are things that you can deal with on an instantaneous basis. Technologies, however, evolve over time.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at growth and you look at changes. And one of the biggest challenges that you really have to look at how to deal with the technology in a very, very procedural and step-by-step sequence.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest challenges is that we have a good understanding about typically how the systems and that side typically operate. But the technology is really the enabler, and there's not really a very good understanding about the technologies. John and Gil's discussions, particularly about how we look at cloud computing, you know, from our standpoint, the emphasis is that you never make the technology the end game, and that's what we think is really one of the biggest problems.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is not in terms of the technology as the end game, but looking at the actual results or the mission or the requirements that you have for your respective tasks and your projects. Those should be the things that you focus on.
Mm-hmm.
When you use the technology as the end game, it creates the problem because, as we all are well aware and as John alluded to, technologies change typically 18 months to every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you're typically looking at a major revitalization of your organization and sometimes really being economically impractical because of the cost of really revamping your entire organization.
Yeah.
But the emphasis has to be on how you look at the technology as a problem solver, mm-hmm. not as the end game.
That's Dr. John Hurley. He's a professor of information strategies at the National Defense University's iCollege. Also in studio with me this afternoon, Dr. John Saunders and Professor Gil Duval, all of the iCollege at the National Defense University. And our conversation continues on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
A $3.5 billion sale of an advanced anti-missile interception system is a part of an accelerating military buildup against Iran. The U.S. signed the deal with the United Arab Emirates, and Pentagon Press Secretary George Little said it's an important step in improving the region's security through a missile defense architecture. Iran responded by firing off some of its newer and faster missiles on New Year's Day. I'm J.J. Green.
How can we determine which armed aerial scout helicopter is best for the U.S. warfighter? By proving it in competition. EADS North America is ready to prove that our AAS-72X is superior to any other armed aerial scout helicopter out there. So let the competition begin. Saying you're the best isn't good enough for our warfighters. You need to prove it. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
And tonight's number one star of the game, from your Washington Capitals, number 83, Jay Beagle.
Hi, this is Jay Beagle of the Washington Capitals.
Here comes Jay Beagle, a chance in the empty net, and he puts it in. Jay Beagle into the empty net with a goaltender pulled. The Capitals lead it 4-1.
And you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the home of the Caps.
Double the risk. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. A study indicates that the risk factors for stroke may also lead to cognitive problems. High blood pressure or hypertension is a risk factor for stroke, and a study that followed 30,000 people found hypertension is also a risk factor for cognitive impairment, affecting memory, speech, language, and problem solving. Dr. Walter Koroshetz is the deputy director of the NIH Institute. He says it should motivate people to live healthier.
We can control our blood pressure. We can control our weight. We can get exercise. And those things usually people associate with better cardiac health and preventing heart attacks. The message here is that it actually promotes brain health.
The study in the journal Neurology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's
going on? June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about cybersecurity in the national defense realm with Professor Gil Duvall, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley of the National Defense University's iCollege, each of them participating in the 11th U.S. DoD International Cyber Workshop. and talking about some of the issues presented there and some other challenges that the defense community is dealing with when it comes to cybersecurity. Dr. Saunders, we've talked about Stuxnet and some of the issues that Stuxnet is presenting from a theoretical point of view. Fortunately, at least we're not aware of Stuxnet attacks inside the United States, but we're now aware of the possibility of them. We talked a little bit during the break about breaking out of kind of a checklist mentality. I've referred to it in the past as proactive versus reactive thought when it comes to cybersecurity. How are we doing it, getting beyond the reactive thinking that if I've done all the things that I'm supposed to do, I'm secure? That's something CIOs across government have been worried about, I think, for a long time.
Well, I think you alluded to it earlier. We need to get down to people on all levels and up to people on all levels. It's not just the CISO's job, but it's the job of every individual to be cognizant of security and what am I doing and am I careful about those emails that I click on. And the CEO, is he or she aware of what's going on in this arena and are they doing their best to support it, whether it be just through verbal support or through financial support.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hurley, I wish I could give credit to the CIO in the federal government who I heard say it first. I can't remember who it was. But I heard a comment that because of the dependence on computer networks and data, mm-hmm. just for day-to-day operations, this mm-hmm. person said, we're all cybersecurity professionals mm-hmm. in the federal government now. Mm-hmm. That's even true as we see the kinds of devices that men and women are taking into combat right at the tip of the spear. Even they have to consider themselves cybersecurity professionals. You know, I see the stories about the Army starting to use smartphones mm-hmm. Right in theater. Talk about that. And how you get down to the very end user level, the actual mission execution. I mean, you don't get much more on the edge of mission execution than a warfighter mm-hmm. actually doing the job on a day-to-day basis. Talk about educating that person efficiently and effectively to be a cybersecurity professional to the level that they need to be.
Well, it's very interesting. Something you mentioned to me really is the crux of the entire issue. One of the biggest challenges is the fact that the consumer typically is very interested in convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look at making things more convenient, particularly from a computing standpoint, it provides a number of different entries into our respective infrastructure. And so one of the challenges becomes that typically a lot of the different solutions are primarily more of an add-on. One of the things that we teach and really focus on, particularly at the iCollege, is that you got to look at security from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the beginning, you got to look at it through the entire process. One of the things that we look at that John has really reinforced within his class is that one of the things that's very important is continuous monitoring. So it's not just looking at it at a particular point.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at it from the beginning. And typically, there's an opportunity to see some deviations in normal activity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's generally those kinds of things that require us to look at, because the other thing that's happening is, of course, the hackers are becoming more advanced as well. So as we're starting to evolve in terms of the types of things that we have to look for, we also have to be very careful and to be very aware of the fact that those who are trying to get entry into our respective environments are also mm-hmm. evolving as well.
Professor Duvall, are you optimistic or pessimistic that evolutionary process is one that I don't know if you can say winning as opposed to losing, but at least are we keeping pace with the bad guys in that evolutionary process? That are we learning as quickly as they are adapting to what we're learning?
Well, I would say that overall we're much, much better now than we were even 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The learn and adaptation cycle is always, I think it's a back and forth issue. We've certainly done a better job in terms of protecting our networks, the awareness issues, but in many cases, there's a lot of smart people on the other side. So, you know, we don't have a monopoly on good ideas and intelligence. But I am very optimistic that we're doing much better than mm-hmm. we were. Now, we're going to create bulletproof systems? Never. But I think we can certainly realize where we need to improve. And I think one thing we're trying to do from an educational perspective is to identify those skills that we need to pass on at all levels of an organization, kind of what John mentioned, from the technicians all the way to the senior decision makers? What kind of things do they need to know in order to be smarter about security?
That's a bit of a revelation for some folks, though, that we'll never create a bulletproof system, because I think for a long time, people thought eventually we'll get to the state of cyber nirvana where we'll have something nobody will be able to hack into. And I don't know that there, I know there were some folks that never thought that was reasonable, but not very many. And it seems like most folks now are in your camp on that one.
Well, I think that's just the reality of things. As we try to, one thing we see is that I always say if a person can think of it in terms of creating, a person can think of how, ways to break it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always in that pattern of creating something and breaking something, creating something and breaking something. So I think that's what you have to realize about information technology in its use in government systems.
One area that we haven't touched on yet is the development of the people who are going to do all of this, the workforce that will work for DOD and all federal agencies, and the competition that's there and the skills that they will need to develop or that somebody will need to develop in them. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit, if we can, when we come back from the break. My guests from the National Defense University iCollege today are Professor Gil Duvall, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley. And we'll continue our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How do we lead in an era of complex challenges? How is DOD changing the way it does business? What does USDA do to promote agricultural exports? And how can the U.S. be more competitive? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Dean Hunter is the Deputy Director of Facility Security and Contracting at OPM.
When the National Weather Service forecasts an inch of snow or any amount of ice to affect the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, that kicks off our protocols to conduct a COG conference call. We kick off the call at 3 a.m. We get on a secondary conference call with OPM senior staff. Our goal is to get that decision out no later than 4 a.m.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today on Pentagon Solutions, talking about cybersecurity in the national defense realm, are from the National Defense University iCollege, Professor Gil Duval, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley, all in on the conversation today. And Dr. Saunders, I mentioned before the break, we were talking about the cyber workforce, and I said during the commercials that I've asked people from all walks of the cyber world, what makes a good cyber professional? I always get a different answer. Nobody says the same thing. You mentioned one trait off the air that I thought was particularly interesting. Expand on that for me.
At one time, I think you could specialize in an area and develop that over a long time. The world has really changed. The technology changes so fast that I think the most important trait for people to have these days in this arena is fluidity. How fast can you learn the new system and then take it apart to see what kind of security features can be compromised? Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly what the hackers are doing. We do a very interesting thing at NDU in our labs is that we hire the young men and women at the local universities who are majoring in computer science as either freshmen or sophomores, because they're the people who are out there on the bleeding edge looking at this technology, taking it apart, looking to see how it works, and they can then educate us, okay, so that we can then pass that on to our students. What are the potential frailties in these new systems, and what do you need to watch for as leaders in this arena, and how do you stay on top of the new technologies as they emerge, mm-hmm. security-wise?
That's quite a culture change, I imagine, from the way that IT's been done over the past, well, I guess ever since there's been IT, really. My thought is that for a long time, it was the veterans who taught the younger folks, and that model looked pretty much the way that it looked in a lot of other walks of life. And this isn't the only area. Cybersecurity isn't the only area where I'm hearing now that young folks are at least leading, if not teaching, on a lot of these issues. Dr. Hurley, you're again agreeing with your colleague. Talk about that concept, though, of the culture change, because this is not easy for folks of our generation to see that leadership, at least, if not the idea that we know everything, we know what you need to know, to folks that are college age and in some cases younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, you absolutely hit it on the head. One of the bigger challenges, particularly in the federal government, it becomes even more of a problem because we are very much so mired within a very strong cultural sense.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very simple way and a very strong and a very strict way of doing things, and it's very difficult for us to look outside of that regular paradigm. The young people that John mentioned, they don't have those same types of restrictions, to say. So typically they're looking at things that are happening. And one of the funniest episodes I had in one of our classes was that I was talking with Commander, and we were talking about because one of our major issues is how do you manage not only those who are directly involved with the technical side, but how do you manage those people?
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, how do you bring into the workforce those folks who really know the technologies better? And it's very challenging for the military and for some in the senior government because they're so used to dealing with things a certain way. But the bottom line, as an effective manager and leader, you got to be able to make that step and bring those people above.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have the restrictions and the limitations in terms of how they look at things. And the conversation ended up with the fact that I understood and respected the position of the military person, but my response was that that's well and good. But those who are trying to hack into your system don't have those same restrictions.
And don't care.
Absolutely. They're throwing everything they can at you.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to change the mindset in terms of how we look at protecting our assets.
How much, Professor Duval, of all of this is cultural and is mindset rather than mechanics and policies? And when I say rhetoric, I don't mean it in an ideological way, but just in how much of this is we have to change the way people think, and to use a government agency, a civilian agency model, an SESer is not used to being taught by a GS-9, and then have to execute what that person suggests that they do. That's not usually how the structure works. How much of it is that kind of thing in changing the way people think?
Well, I think you brought up the cultural aspect is very, very important. One of the things that we have to do is in a way to counter a culture, you have to introduce concept of what I call cyberculture. Cyberculture realizes that things move at a different speed. Things share at a different in a different way. It's not always a pass down from junior from senior to junior. So sometimes, you know, there's a two-way conversation. So part of what we try to do, and digress a little bit, is try to teach something I call the, for senior members, the art of cybersecurity, understanding the aspects of making cybersecurity an art. So part of that is, you know, is ART. One thing is understanding the attribution aspect. There's a technology piece to that, intelligence, knowledge management that goes into determining attribution. There's a rules of engagement piece that comes into how do we determine command and control, how do we do decision making, and lastly the T part of this is setting up trust relationships. Now the T part is where we have to set up a cultural change within between juniors and seniors, learning that this trust goes both ways. It doesn't always become a series of I'll tell you what to do and you do what I say. It has to be an aspect of listening and trusting that ideas can come in from all different areas.
That's something I would love to explore more. We won't have time to do it today, but maybe we can connect and talk more about that. We could take one more break and come back and wrap up our conversation with cybersecurity experts from the National Defense University's iCollege, Dr. John Hurley, Dr. John Saunders, and Professor Gil Duvall. We'll be back in just a moment to finish up on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Look for agencies to rely more on HR University this year. They don't have a lot of money to train staff. HR University is filling the gaps by allowing agencies to share courses online that are vetted by subject matter experts. It's a project of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, but it's not just for human resources staff. Department of Veterans Affairs officials say their version of online training helped them save $200 million in turnover costs.
The beginning of another year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Solving the Big Data Problem by Mark Logic.
Total cost of ownership and how to shrink it. It's on everyone's mind. Operations and maintenance can be two-thirds of a technology investment, a massive expense lurking below the tip of the iceberg. Don't fall into this trap with your relational database. It isn't really free. Small changes cause months of delays and hundreds, even thousands of man hours. TCO will be off the charts faster than you can say Titanic.
Learn how to solve the Big Data Problem at MarkLogic.com. That's MarkLogic.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Register today for Affirm's luncheon on Friday, January 13th, and hear from the new U.S. CIO, Stephen Van Roekel, in a fireside chat with Affirm President and CIO from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Darren Ash. In his first major address inside the Capitol Beltway, Van Roekel will discuss the role of technology in closing that widening productivity gap between government and industry. That's January 13th at the Sofitel Hotel, McPherson Square, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. This briefing is sure to be a sellout, so register today, Affirm.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, wrapping up today's Pentagon Solutions conversation with Professor Gil Duvall, Dr. John Saunders, and Dr. John Hurley of the National Defense University's iCollege, talking about cybersecurity in the defense realm. And as I mentioned during the break, Professor Duvall, a lot of times when I have conversations about the state of cybersecurity in the United States, I come away more scared than I was when I started. What's your view of where we are today in cybersecurity? Should we be optimistic, pessimistic, or neutral about where things are headed?
Well, thank you. I see that if we look at a cyber maturity model, cybersecurity maturity model of three stages, one being the kind of the tactical, technical level, the operational procedural level, and the highest level being the strategic thought level. I think we're about midway up the ladder where I think we need to be. Mm-hmm. We're getting much better in using the technology and setting up the operating procedures. But where we need the improvement is understanding the strategic value of information and being able to correlate. Again, as you kind of mentioned before, getting away from a checklist mentality up to a concept mentality, mm-hmm. where we can see trends and understand what's happening and make decisions based on total picture view, vice just what we're seeing in front of us on the screen.
Dr. Saunders, should I be as scared as I get sometimes when I hear people talk about where we really are today?
You know, one of the problems from a security professional standpoint is that you know the worst that can happen. Mm-hmm. So you do tend to get paranoid about these things. But I had a very wise professor once tell me that things are never as bad or as good as you may imagine. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think even at worst scenario, people can only come up with single targets and doing damage in one or two places. Major attacks on our infrastructure are just not in the works, as mm-hmm. far as I can see.
Dr. Hurley, what do you think? Good, bad, indifferent, or trending?
We should be optimistic. At the iCollege, we have really a three-prong approach. We focus on awareness, training, and education. The most important thing is that we now have people aware of the potential problems out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear, I think, really is a good thing. It guides them to be a lot more careful.